the Rugby Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to William Hill's Rugby Podcast. My name is Michael Casey and I'm joined on the line by former England international prop Jeff Probyn as we look forward to this weekend's Autumn Internationals, a highlight of which probably England versus New Zealand. We all know what happened at Twickenham last year when these two went ahead, and I guess most people from this hemisphere will be hoping for the same. Jeff, we're in for a treat, aren't we?
We're in for a treat. I think there's no doubt about that. I mean, England, in all honesty, haven't shone in their two previous internationals. Big surprise that they beat Australia. Australia didn't turn up, and England, playing a pretty dull game, still managed to get the result and get the tries and get on the board. Last week against Argentina, it was a game where basically England played the first half very well, but then fell asleep in the second half. So this England team will need to step up to the plate and play 80 minutes against what is a very, very, very good New Zealand team. But if you're an international player, these are the games that you want to play.
Yeah, I have to agree. You made a point there, playing for 80 minutes. I think England performed well in the second half against Australia, not so well in the first, and then in the second half against Argentina, they were just seemed like they were all out of ideas after a reasonable opening half. They're not going to get a chance like that on Saturday to win the game if they can't perform for 80 minutes, are they, Jeff?
Not at all. And the big thing about it is that this is a new New Zealand side that are out for revenge. As you so rightly said, we're the only team that's beaten New Zealand since they won the World Cup. And that game last season was one that came off the back of what the New Zealanders never used it as an excuse. It has to be said that there was a bug that ran through their camp, and that did have an impact on them. They're going to want to go out and they're going to want to prove a point. And there's a lot of people in this New Zealand team that were involved in last year's game who will feel very, very disappointed. So England will have to be on their mettle.
Yeah, as you rightly said, only one loss for New Zealand in 26 games. That, of course, came at Twickenham last year. They've gone on since then to have a spotless rugby championship campaign, beat France last week, and now come into this game all guns firing, you imagine. I have to say, I'm personally concerned about England. England have named the side for Saturday that will start. They go with Mike Brown at 15, Chris Ashton and Ben Foden on the wings, Joel Tomkins and Billy Twelvetrees in the centre, halfbacks Lee Dixon and Owen Farrell up front, Joe Marler, Dylan Hartley and Dan Cole are the front row, Joe Launchbury and Courtney Laws continue at second row, with Tom Wood, Chris Robshaw and Billy Vunipola as the starting back row. I think last week, Jeff, England maybe missed an opportunity to blood a couple of new faces, perhaps against Argentina, a side that are struggling at the moment.
And well, they did. And there's also the fact that, I mean, one of the problems I see with this England team is we haven't got any real flyers. I mean, Ashton's quite good, but he's not really 100% on form. Foden's a fullback. Brown's a fullback. Twelvetrees and Tomkins hasn't quite really gelled, and they're playing against the likes of Israel Dagg, Nonu, Smith, Carter, Seve, you know, for the New Zealanders, who are a team who've been playing together for an entire year since winning the World Cup, and as you say, going 26 games. My worry for England is if we don't get off the ground quick enough, this New Zealand side have got pace across the back line that is a bit faster now. So we haven't got any pace on the bench neither. On the bench, England have got, in the backs, they've got Ben Young, Toby Flood, and Alex Goode. Well, Alex Goode is a great footballer, but he hasn't got pace. Toby Flood is a fly half stroke inside centre, but doesn't have real pace. And, of course, Ben Young is just a scrum half. You're not going to want to stick him on the wing against any of these guys. So the concern for England is if their forwards can't dominate the New Zealand pack, their backs will be playing against men who are slightly quicker and more used to playing together than the England back line. I am slightly concerned that England will lose this game by a cricket score if they don't get it right.
Yeah, I have to say that I have similar concerns. You flagged up a lot of the real talent in this Kiwi backline. Israel Dagg at 15, Charles Piatua on one wing, Ben Smith and Mar Nonu in the centres, Julian Cervea back in the side for Corey Jane on the other wing, and Dan Carter and Aaron Smith at halfbacks. It's just not even fair, the talent they have in this squad. With regards to the betting then, England are now 11-2 outsiders, 25-1 the draw, and New Zealand 1-10 favourites. With regards to the handicap betting, England plus 13 points is 10-11, and New Zealand, if you take 13 points off, a price up at the same price of 10-11. Do you think that perhaps 13 points could be the margin? Could it be more? Could it be less, Jeff?
As I say, I'm quite proud of and pleased with the way that England have played defensively in the two games that they've played, against Argentina and against Australia. Although they didn't particularly play well, their defence worked quite well. So, my hope is that they play with that front up defence against New Zealand and are able to contain that players. If they can't, then I'm 13 points is not enough. I think that this will be a 20-point victory to New Zealand. And my heart is saying 13 or less, but my head is saying 20, maybe even more than that.
Yeah, I think I agree. I have a bad feeling that the Kiwis could be bouncing back with style from last year's upset, and they'll continue the fine form. I think they have a gear on the international scene that no other side can quite match at the moment, so I'd be inclined to agree with you. With regards to the betting then, other handicaps you can look at winning margin lives, if you like. I mean, New Zealand to win this one by something like 16 to 20 points, that might be something that appeals to me. I'm not sure if you agree. 5-1,
I think that's a good bet. I think that 5-1, that is a good bet.
Yeah, I like that one. If you're thinking that, then obviously New Zealand on the handicap, minus 13 points, 10-11 would be the way. Obviously a bigger punt, a bit more reward at the 16-20 points, winning margin live at 5-1. It's a very skinny, it's a very skinny price for New Zealand to win on the double result for them to take both halves. That's 4-11, but just a bit more value than you get perhaps on the outright.
Well, I think the whole point is when you reflect even back on that game last season where England pulled off the surprise victory, there was a moment when New Zealand cut loose and they scored two tries literally in the space of about 5 minutes. And you suddenly realise that this was a New Zealand team that, if they're given half a chance, do have an amazing ability to score tries. They showed last week against France that they got strength in depth when the French played a very, very physical game against them, but New Zealand still came through to score the tries in the end to win the game. They've got a lot of confidence, and this is a game that, there is a rumour that the New Zealand has said, we go to France, we don't care about France. We played in Japan, we don't care about Japan. But the game we want to win is the game against England. Now, if they have that mentality, I think that 16 to 20 points, 5-1 is a very, very good bet.
Yeah, that's a bit of a scary thought as well, isn't it, for any prospective England player, the fact that they are being targeted by this absolutely fantastic side.
Also that little bit that Graham Rantry did say that they were going to target the All Black scrum. Now, considering that we have a relatively young and inexperienced second row in Courtney Laws and Launchbury, we have Joe Marler, Dylan Hartley and Cole as our front row. Cole has got a bit more experience than Marler. Marler, who was destroyed by Adam Jones last year at Cardiff, is playing against Owen for New Zealand. And Owen Franks for New Zealand is they've got a very experienced front row in Owen Franks and Keith Mialamu and Tony Woodcock, one of the most experienced front rows in world rugby at the moment. So our pack's going to be up against it a little bit.
Yeah, and I think if we can't hold sway in the forwards, we've got no chance out wide as well, just given the names in that back line. It is a bit of a concern, and even more so the fact that there's no Alex Corbisierra for England, who is really developing into one of the finest in his position. Not having him and as well out wide, not having Manu Tuilagi, I think are two potential game breakers that Stuart Lancaster will not be able to call upon for this Saturday. So, yeah, I think on the handicap then, we're quite in agreement that New Zealand are worth a play, and that the 16 to 20 points winning margin live at 5-1 is another one to look at. As well on Saturday then, Wales are taking on Argentina. Now, Wales' desperate record against Sanzar nations, if you like, South Africa, New Zealand and Australia, just continues, doesn't it? They've been dominant in the last 2 years in the Six Nations. We all remember what happened in Cardiff last year. But when they come and take on the guys from down under, they just are you know, they have a desperate record.
They do. It's been years since they've got anywhere near beating one of the sides. And, you know, there's a standard joke that they once lost to one of the Samoan sides. And, you know, fortunately, they were only playing, what was it, Western Samoa rather than the whole Samoa. It's always been the thing with Wales, but they are a very good side now. The big problem for Wales is they took that battering against South Africa last week, and it was a battering. It's lost them two or three key players. Jonathan Davis and Adam Jones are both out of this game. We know that because they're out of the entire Autumn Series, and there's even rumours that they might not get back in time for the Six Nations. So. This is going to be in some ways a new look Wales side, and we're going to see some possible new talents. The centre Corey Allen, who plays for Cardiff Blues, who there's talk about him potentially starting this game. But I think the Welsh will beat the Argentinians. The Argentinians will take some heart out of the second half against England, but. Their body language when they're on the field at Twickenham last week was not of a team that is confident and going forward. And going down to Millennium Stadium, playing against a Wales team, but despite the injuries, they've still got the likes of George North, still got Lee Halfpenny, still got the makeup of their entire pack, apart from Adam Jones. Geoffrey Jenkins winning his 100th cap, probably. We're going to see a Welsh side that's going to be buoyant and up for it. And I think they may be troubled by Argentina, but I think they've got just enough to beat Argentina and probably a 10 to 15 point margin.
That's interesting there. I agree completely what you said about the injuries. I mean, losing Jonathan Davies and Adam Jones, we mentioned about England not having Corbusier and Manitoulin. I think not having Jones and Davies is a bigger loss by comparison. Of course, now Alex Cuthbert on the wing for them, another star of the Lions series this year. The handicap betting then, are the outrights, the traders completely agree that Wales are rightly heavy favourites for this one. 1-5 they are to win, 100-30 Argentina. The handicap, you take 10 points off the Welsh, give a 10 point head start to Argentina for a 10-11 each of two. What would you think? You said about 10 to 15 points Wales then, so would you think that maybe taking 10 points off the off the Welsh is a bet at 10-11?
I think so. I think it is. I think that Argentina will fancy, as we saw last week, they still have quite a strong scrum. They were pushing the England scrum backwards a little bit on their ball, still using that Brigitte thing. I think the fly-off Sanchez had a very good game against England and moved the ball very well. He showed that if he gets possession, he gets a bit of space, he has the ability to play. For the Welsh, those losses are key players for them, and particularly in the midfield, Jonathan Davis being out, there's a bit of disruption there, and so from that point of view, the Argentinians will feel that they've got a chance to play in that game. But I just feel that Wales, particularly with Warren Gatland now really back into control, back at the forefront of it, coming back off the successful Lions, having his 10 players playing in the Lions. Yes, he's lost a few of those players, but he's got the confidence back in that Welsh side to go out there and win.
Yeah, I think you make a fair point. I have to say I was particularly impressed with Argentina. England did not need to be very good at all to cruise past them last week. And I think despite the losses and the upset that they had against South Africa last week, Wales will be good. Is there anyone that stands out as a try scorer for you? I mean, I know I'd struggle to pick one from the Argentinian side on what we saw last week. I mean, George North, Lee Halfpenny would be the favourites you'd imagine to cross the whitewash. Is there anyone that you like as a potential try scorer?
Well, I always like Lee Halfpenny because he's one of those sneaky little players who, you know, he hasn't got the power and the physique of George North, and the great thing about George North is he attracts players to him, which allows the likes of Lee Halfpenny, who's got quick feet and quick eye, to follow up and take the inside pass. So, you know, Halfpenny's always one of my little favourites to bet on as a try scorer, running off the back of some of the bigger players that Wales uses big punches.
Yeah, okay, I like that. I think I'd maybe also have a look at one of the back rowers perhaps to get over the line. Sam Warburton had a very good game against South Africa last week, and there wouldn't be a try scorer for me. So I'd maybe look at Toby Fowler to cross the line. He's often on the end of some big bullocking runs, and I think that he might be worth a bit of value at a bigger price. The prices, by the way, for the tri-score markets will go live later on in the day. But yeah, so Lee Halfpenny and Toby Faletau, perhaps the studio picks then.
Yeah, I've got to say, in all honesty, though, you know, the Toby Faletau thing will be more difficult because of the power of the Argentinian scrum. The fact the Argentinian, if you look at the way that the Argentinians scrummage for the ball, even against England, even though they weren't playing, as I would say, at their best, on their put-in, they still use that nudging forward, walking forward action to strike the ball back. Against a Welsh side without Adam Jones, the Welsh will hook the ball. They will be very good at hooking the ball. I have no doubt about that. But they won't have necessarily the stable platform that will allow Faletau to break off the back of the scrum and get those bullocking runs that he so likes to do.
Okay, fair enough then. Well, South Africa handed Wales a 24 points to 15 defeat at the Millennium last week. They now travel to Murrayfield to take on Scotland. Now, this game kicks off on Sunday, but once again, the Springboks are heavy favourites to win this one. In the betting, Scotland 13-2, South Africa 1-15, and the handicap, so the spread for a 10-11 bet each way, is 14 points. I can only see this being another big win for the South Africans, Jeff. Not sure about you.
Well, I agree with you. I think that the fact that they've brought back Bakker Botha as well to add that little bit of solidity and experience to their front five means that even though they've dropped the beast, shall we say, to the bench, and they've dropped the best hooker in the world, Bismarck Duplessis, to the bench, they've still got a lot of strength in that South African pack, and you kind of think to yourself that Scotland will struggle up front, and that will mean that they will struggle behind. This is not a great Scotland side, and this South African side is getting better and better. Mayo, the coach of the South Africans, has said that he's been aiming to try and imitate the finest flattery of all, imitate the All Blacks in drive and improving the standards of his team. And the South African team is a very, very, very strong team. So I think that, in all honesty, we're going to see South Africa perhaps turn over Scotland by more than 20 points. So I would say that this is going to be a big win for South Africa.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned some of the talent there. The fact that a player like Bismarck Duplessis can be dropped to the bench for that. He was superb last week, as was, I thought, Foy Dupriz. Jean de Villiers had a superb captain's performance, and Brian Habana, well, he went past George North like he wasn't even there, which is no mean feat last week for them. I mean, the Scotland had a respectable enough win, but it was over a completely different class opposition. Of course, they beat Japan by 42 points to 17 last week. They're going to get a completely different sort of experience this Saturday, one would think.
It's a completely different animal, and you've got to say that the physicality that the Springboks bring to a game is going to be entirely different to what the Japanese bought. The Japanese are a tier two side. You know, South Africa are number two in the world. Scotland are going to have to front up, and they're going to have a very, very tough game. But, you know, they'll be expecting that to players, so they know what they're coming. It's how they deal with it and how they put it together. But, you know, you look at the likes of the Springboks, and you look at the bench, and they've got Eban Elizabeth, the 20-odd stone 20-year-old, dropped to the bench.
Isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, really. They've got so much strength in depth on the physical side of things that you just can't see how Scotland can face that sort of size of player and that sort of quality, and the way that South Africa are playing at the moment. It's very difficult for us as Northern Hemisphere guides to look at the intensity of these guys and the way they play their rugby, and for our nations to just suddenly step up virtually 2 months into our season to play against this sort of quality. It's going to be very difficult for Scotland.
Yeah, I'd agree then. So the handicap, the minus 14 on South Africa, 10-11 seems like a play. I go back to those winning margin lives. 16-20 point win by South Africa is 9-2. 21-25, so a real thrashing, is 7-1. Is that maybe about where you'd be putting your money, Jeff?
Yeah, well, I think it will be.
You think it could be as big as 21-25 points?
Yeah, I do. I think that, you know, the Springboks have started playing like the All Blacks in terms that they don't rest off. They don't ease off. Once they get points on the ball, they go for the juggler. You know, too many times, a lot of the Northern Hemisphere team, and England in particular, as we saw last week, put 24 points on Argentina in the first half and then failed to score in second. You won't find that in South Africa. If South Africa start putting points on the board, they will go for the entire 80. So it's going to be a difficult afternoon for Scotland.
Yeah, with that in mind then, another bet that I quite like. How about highest scoring half to be the second half then? Do you think, given the way that the South African play, the sort of brutality with which they continue to attack, for there to be more points in the second 40 minutes, 4-5, that sound like a good bet?
That sounds like a good point. A good bet, because obviously the as the players become more fatigued, there's greater opportunity, and the backs, the Springbok backs are very, very good. We, as you say, you got the winger
Brian Abana.
Brian Abana, my brain's not working at this time of the day. Brian Abana, and I mean Pat Lammy coming in to fly half as well. He moved from the fullback. They bought Willie LaRue in at fullback. He gives them extra pace and that attacking option. They've got Peterson. They've got De Villiers in centre with Foree. You know, they've got their full line out. They're drop Monty Stern to the bench to protect him because they think he's got a bit of an injury, but he's still on the bench. He's still around if Pat Lammy doesn't work out. So, you know, there's a lot of power there. You look at the front row, even when they've brought in Steenkamp, they've brought in Strauss, they're brought in these guys for the guys that are replacing, as I say, replacing Duplessis and the Beast. Then, you know, it's a very, very powerful South African side. I would think that they will grind down the Scotland pack and basically cut loose in the second half. So that's a good bet. Second half, more points.
Good stuff. I think that Pat Lammy's maybe worth a bit of interest for an anytime try score as well. And I have to say, I can't think of too many players in this Scotland side that I'd really want him to be departing with my heart earned to get a try for. You know, I mean, Sean Maitland's obviously a very talented player, the Glasgow Warriors fullback, and on the wings you've got Tommy Seymour and Sean Lamont, but I really can't be too confident in them getting anything other than maybe penalties in this game.
Well, you know, they've got Richie Gray playing for them, gives them line-out presence. You know, David Denton's physical, runs around a lot, but, you know, he's not going to be the same physicality as these South Africans. John Barkley in the back row. This is not a bad Scotland team in the sense of they've got a lot of experience with Jim Hamilton and guys like that, but again, they don't have a real pace. Maitland has moved to the fullback only this year, has been playing, he played on the wing before. They're unlucky in Scotland, they've had some injuries. People like Visser, who was a great try scorer for them, scored lots of tries in his time, he's injured this. So there aren't that many people. You've got to look at Greg Laidlaw as a possible try scorer for him, maybe darting around the side of a ruck or possibly coming off the back of a scrum. But I really can't see any of the other backs, as you say. It's going to be a very tough day for the Scots. I think it's not a game that I think they expect to win, and that mentality could lead to as you say, just the penalties, just kicking the goals, Rory Jackson kicking the goals for him.
Fair enough then, so we'll stick with the highest scoring half as to be the second as our favourite bet. And then the final game that we're going to talk about today, it is Ireland versus Australia. Now this is one that, I mean, what we've talked about so far, there's been quite a few that we fancy to, well, all three games fancy to be reasonably one-sided affairs. Hopefully this game should be a bit more of a contest.
Yeah, I think that this game is a game that I can actually see Ireland winning. I think John Schmidt has got them off running really, really well. We had Jake McGrath playing in his first game, getting man of the match as a prop forward. We know that the Australian front rows are not good, despite the fact that they've brought in Kepu for Alexander. They're still not what we would call one of the best scrummaging units. Well, the Irish side have actually stepped up to the plate and playing as well as they did against Samoa last week. And it's always easy to say, oh, you put 40 points on Samoa. But Samoa are a very good side. They're a very physical side. They've got some good players. We know that because we see them in the Premiership week in, week out. And so we've got this aspect of these players playing at that level. But the fact is that this Irish team actually play some very, very, very good rugby. They combined well. Brian O'Driscoll, the usual Brian O'Driscoll, Darcy centre midfielding, young David Kearney coming on, scoring two tries. Yes, they've not got Tommy Bowe, the Irish side now, but they do have Kearney, who showed what a remarkable talent he is, almost as good as his brother, playing fullback. So I think that this Irish side will actually be a bit of a surprise to the Australians, and I think it's a game that Ireland can win.
Yeah, I'd have to say I agree. You mentioned the win over Samoa. It was 40-9, and now Samoa have come over to the Northern Hemisphere and these Autumn Internationals, and they've beaten Northern Hemisphere sides in recent years, you know, and they would have been so up for that game. There's a minute silence before for Peter Fatiolofa, who's of course a Samoan rugby legend who sadly passed away, so they would have been fired up for this game, and Ireland really, really stepped up. As you mentioned, the two tries scored for Dave Kearney, whose obviously brother Rob was probably taken all the plaudits in that household for the last few years, but the Leinster winger really stepped up, and say two tries on debut, he'd be someone I'd be looking at this weekend if he plays as a potential try scorer. We do have the side, the Australian starting 15, and again, it's an impressive backline, but you've just got question marks over those forwards. The backline, they go with Israel Folau, Adam Ashley Cooper, Tavita Kiridrani, Matt Tamua, Nick Cummins, Quade Cooper and Will Genia, which I think, to be fair, you know, it is a strong backline, but up front it is really where you've got to have your questions. James Slipper, Stephen Moore, Sakopi Kepu. Okay, Stephen Moore and Kepu you'd be happy with. Then James Horwell, Rob Simmons, Scott Fardy, Michael Hooper and Ben Moen as captain. Yeah. It's just a pack that isn't quite, you know, they were poor against England, I thought, and I don't think they made England really play that well to get the victory. And as you say, Ireland really playing some good rugby. Ireland are the outsiders to win on Saturday. They're 6-5, Australia 4-6. Their handicap's 2 points either way. So if you give Ireland a +2 head start, they're 10-11, -2 Australia, 10-11. What do you think? Do you think Ireland are just worth it on the 6-5, or would you play it safe on the handicap?
No, I'd go even more than that. I think Ireland will win by between 7 and 10 points.
Wow!
I honestly think that the Irish side have started. John Smith has gone in there and he's changed the dynamic of the Irish rugby. I'm quite excited about how they're playing at the moment. He's rested players. He's got his players back. He's going to have his full side out there. He's going to have Sexton playing at fly half. He's going to, with the quality experience of the back line added to, Smith has brought in one or two new players who've actually delivered. And, you know, to do that with an Irish side, he's re-galvanised a lot of players. There's a lot of players in that Irish side who will be very, very disappointed about what happened with the Lions. So Brian O'Driscoll obviously being dropped from that final test. And this Irish side wants to prove something against Australia itself, just as Wales are desperate that when they play them next week, that they will beat this Australian side because the Lions did. This Irish side wants to prove a point. And as good as I think the Australian backline is, and the fact that they've come off of a decent win against Italy last week, it's not quite the same. The way they played against England was woefully inadequate, to be honest, and they didn't challenge England properly. They will step up to the plate a little bit more, but I think this Irish side have got something about them, and I expect the seven to ten point win by the Irish, and I'm quite impressed by them.
Okay, then we can back Ireland to win by 6 to 10 points, which would obviously cover that range that you said. So that's kind of one converted score or a bit more. That's 6-1. 1-5 is 9-2, so you can maybe split your stakes across there. And of course, Ireland to win the game is 6-5. With regards to other bets, you can have things like if you fancied Ireland to make a quick start in the game, for them to win the race to 10 points, so be the first side to get 10 points on the scoreboard, that can be back to even money. Would that be something that appeal, or do you think maybe the second half would be when they hit the straps?
No, I think that could be. I think that'll be backed. I think that the Irish will go out there and attack them and play. And they've watched that game against England and they'd see the way that the Australians played. And the Australians have got a good. You can't discount the Australians' potential for try scorers with the likes of Folau, Kiridani, and Ashley Cooper. They've got potential for try scorers across that thing. And obviously, if Will Genia plays well, then they're a side to watch. But the problem is, if you're playing behind a beaten pack, it's incredibly difficult for a scrum half to actually galvanise his side. Quade Cooper is up and down. You never know which one you're going to get. So I think that, you know, there's more stability and more, how can I say this, confidence. I've got more confidence in the Irish back line and the way that I expect them to play than I have about the Australians. I still don't think we've seen the Australians play consistent rugby, whereas I think this Irish side are, and they're playing a style that John Smith has brought through from Leinster. He has a lot of Leinster players in the Irish side, so they're gelling into his system of style and play much better and much quicker than the way that the Australians are adapting to how Ewan McKenzie wants them to play. So I would expect that Ireland would be, you know, it may be maybe 10 points to 6 or whatever, but I think the Ireland will get to the 10 points first.
Brilliant then. So the race of 10 points for Ireland at even money, and Ireland by 6 to 10 points. That's 6 to 1, and the Ireland to win the game is 6 to 5. I think I'd go in there and I'd put in Dave Kearney as an anytime try scorer. I like to back players that are in form, and he must be on top of the world having scored twice on his debut. So
I think so as well. I think he's also a very talented player. I think you've got to throw in a Brian O'Driscoll in there somewhere, because Brian, for all the comments that he, you know, he bit his lip and carried on and was very much the lion, he would have been disappointed in not being able to show what he could do against the Australians down there in the summer. And this is his first opportunity to stick two fingers up to Warren Gatley.
Brilliant. Okay then, so we're thinking overall it's going to be pretty comprehensive for the favourites. We think that New Zealand could well and truly bounce back from the defeat last November at Twickenham, and we're backing them for a heavy win and on the handicap and by 16 to 20 points to beat England. A convincing victory for the South Africans against the Scots, and we also think that Wales can bounce back against a below par Argentina side, but we do give some one underdog a bit of a chance, and that's Ireland at 6-5. Is that about everything, Jeff?
I think that's about everything. It's going to be a great weekend of rugby. I'm hoping that rather like Australia, that my heart wins over my head against New Zealand, but somehow I think this week it's my head that's going to win.
Me too, Jeff. Thank you very much.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.